Hello and welcome to Parasitology Revisited, a series of revision podcasts for BVMS graduate entry and infection and immunity students. Hyperbiosis by Dr. Tudor Jones. I've talked about hyperbiosis in a number of my lectures, mainly in relation to the helminths, and emphasised its importance in the epidemiology of infection, disease and control regimes. However, hyperbiosis crops up in many parasite life cycles, which I'm going to explore in this podcast, along with some examples that I expect you to include in any examination question on hyperbiosis. The term hyperbiosis refers to a metabolic state where a parasite slows down its metabolism and goes into a dormant phase. You can think of it as something like hibernation in mammals. We also see a similar situation in insects where it's called diapause. Hyperbiotic forms are a normal part of some parasite life cycles, such as cyst and oocyst formation in parasitic protozoa and eggs in helminths, all of which are adaptations to surviving outside the host. The bradyzoites and bradyzoid cyst of protozoa with indirect life cycles, such as toxoplasma and sarcocystis, are also hyperbiotic forms, which again are part of the parasite's life cycle, as are the larval stages of cestodes that we find in the intermediate host. Entering the hyperbiotic state enables the parasite to remain in the host tissues for long periods of time with minimum energy expenditure. This lowered metabolic state might also help mask the parasite's presence while it waits in the tissues for the signal to reactivate itself and continue its development, usually in another host. In the case of the helminths, we find that hyperbiosis is associated with the juvenile or larval stages of the parasite. As we've seen in the protozoa, hyperbiosis can be an integral part of the life cycle, as in Trichinella. Here, the larval stages are produced by the female in the gut, which then migrate to the host smooth muscle. The larvae then enter muscle cells and form a cyst-like structure inside the muscle cells, inside which the larva enters into a hyperbiotic state. The larva stays in this state until the muscle gets eaten by a predator, after which it is reactivated in the gut of the new host and goes on to develop into an adult. We can also think about the larval stages of the equine nematode Strongylus as being hyperbiotic at certain stages in their somatic migration, as they often remain at their migration sites, such as the mesenteric arteries, ligaments or gut wall, for many months before progressing to the next stage. In this case, the hyperbiotic forms also act as an important reservoir of infection within the host. In other helminths, however, hyperbiosis is a response by the parasite to either seasonal changes in the environment or changes in host physiology. Seasonal hyperbiosis is seen in many helminths infecting ruminants in temperate zones, where the climate shows a marked seasonality. In these cases, the onset of hyperbiosis is related to deteriorating environmental conditions that would put the non-parasitic forms of the parasites, such as larvae, at risk outside the host. Interestingly, we don't see hyperbiosis in the same helminth species found in tropical or subtropical zones, as the environmental conditions are usually suitable for the survival of larvae throughout the year. A good example of seasonal hyperbiosis is seen in Ostotargia, where the larvae are taken in from the pasture in autumn, enter a hyperbiotic state in the gastric glands of the abomasum, rather than progressing to the adult stage, as they do when they are taken in during spring and summer. The hyperbiotic larvae remain in the gastric glands until spring, when they are reactivated in response to changes in host diet, immune status, or physiology, after which they continue the development to the adult stage in the abomasum. Often we see that large numbers of hyperbiotic larvae accumulate in the gastric glands, as larvae will continue to be taken in over a period of weeks while the animals are grazing during autumn and early winter. Simultaneous reactivation of the accumulated larvae in the spring causes severe damage to the abomasum wall, giving rise to the clinical condition known as type 2 ostotargiasis, which can be fatal. This is very different in its outcome from type 1 ostotargiasis, which is the type of disease that we see from infections acquired during spring and summer when larval development progresses sequentially through to adults in the matter of weeks. Another example of seasonal hyperbiosis is seen in the trematode fasciola, where the parasite enters a hyperbiotic state inside the snail intermediate host in autumn. This allows the parasite to overwinter inside the snail rather than taking its chances on the pasture as the metasecarial stage, even though this stage has a thick outer wall to help it survive outside. Physiologically related hyperbiosis refers to the parasite's ability to respond to changes in the host physiology to improve its chances of transmission. The best example of this we've seen is the Ascarid nematode Toxocara, which infects dogs and cats, and where the outcome of infection depends on the age of the host and, in females, its place in the gestation cycle. In animals that become infected in the first 3 to 6 months of life, the parasite follows the typical hepatotracheal migration route we have seen in other ascarids, such as Ascaris. However, in older animals, the migrating larvae move into the somatic tissues where they enter a hyperbiotic state. In the case of Toxocara canis, the larvae remain in this hyperbiotic state until about the 42nd day of gestation, at which point the larvae are reactivated and cross the placenta, ending up in the liver of the fetus. As soon as the young are born, the parasite quickly completes its migration via the lungs, establishing a patent infection in the gut of the newborn within days of its birth. This transplacental migration is the principal route by which pups become infected with Toxocara canis. But sometimes larvae can also be reactivated late in pregnancy and passed to the pups via the mother's milk. In Toxocara cati, however, transplacental transmission does not take place, with transmammary transmission being the principal source of infection for kittens. In both cases, hyperbiotic larvae can persist in the tissues of the adults for many years, acting as a continuing source of infection for pups and kittens. You will see from this podcast that hyperbiosis manifests itself in a number of different ways across the different groups of parasites that I have covered in this course. So it's important that if you're going to understand epidemiology, disease and control of parasite infections, then you must know where hyperbiosis occurs in the life cycle and what the triggers are that control it. This podcast includes topics that I covered in a number of my parasitology lectures, emphasizing that you will need to bring in information from different parts of the course when answering many of the examination questions. After listening to this podcast, you should look back on either your own lecture notes or visit the parasitology website on www.vet.ed.ac.uk/parasitology to check out the examples that I've used here and to find out if there are any other examples of hyperbiosis that you might want to include in an examination question.